Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Good evening, everybody. So if you haven't heard me speak before, come across as before, this is, for those who might not be able to see from the back, it says it across the bottom, cybersecurity and artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence is related to one part of what we do. Everything we do is cybersecurity related. And I will be taking questions at the end. I do have to catch a train, so I can't be around at the end of the event, but I'll take questions obviously at the end of the presentation. And normally when I'm talking to investors, I get the odd question about people's own cybersecurity or cybersecurity of something else they've invested in, and that's fine. So I'm quite happy to take questions on cybersecurity because I am a cybersecurity specialist, not just a specialist CEO. So I'm happy to take questions on either of those. This presentation follows our interims, our financial years, January to December. So I'll be making comments on that. And there's been a couple of updates in the market. The most significant update in the market is we've now seen, in the last few months, we've seen the first GDPR fines for cybersecurity breaches, and I'll be touching on those as well. So in terms of what we do, there's a range of things, and I'll take them down from the left-hand side first. So the biggest growth area we've got at the moment is emergency response. So people get hacked and they call us. We have retainers out there with people and they can call us 24/7. And 24/7, they can call us within 1 hour. We have people gathered ready to advise them on the telephone and if necessary, go on site. And that's the fastest growing area of the business. It's delivered by the team that also do managed security. So the next one, managed security, we have two security operations centres because hackers don't work office hours. You actually see peaks in hacking activity on weekends, bank holidays. So you're more likely to be hacked at 2 a.m. on a Sunday morning than you are 1 o'clock on a work day in the afternoon. So we operate one in Yorkshire, if you haven't worked it out from the accent, and the other Brisbane, Australia. So we've got two quality locations with good source of engineers. We train a lot of people directly from university. We have an apprenticeship program. We can train people from school. So we train people in security operations, and then people buy that as a 24/7 managed service. So the biggest growth area there is we deploy devices that detect breaches. And then we alert the clients for those breaches. That's where we deploy artificial intelligence. So in the marketplace, there are some providers who say, we've got such fancy artificial intelligence that you don't need skilled professionals. The artificial intelligence will do everything to detect a breach. We fundamentally disagree with that because nobody's artificial intelligence is that good yet. So the artificial intelligence feeds the security operations center. And then the skilled engineers will make sense of what the artificial intelligence comes up with. I'll give you some numbers that illustrate how that works. So a medium-sized client where we've got devices on their network taking logs from all their IT systems, and we can take logs from the cloud, we can take it from traditional IT systems. A typical client will send us about 5 billion logs a month. So 5 billion bits of information get combined onto a device or multiple devices. And out of that, the artificial intelligence makes enough sense of those 5 billion bits of information that it will raise maybe 200 alerts. So if it's tuned properly, about 200 alerts, and then the engineers will ultimately raise about 10% of those with the client to investigate, and within that 10%, so maybe 20 things go to the client to investigate, and maybe one of those might be an incident or something happening there. And the benefit of that detection is that you can contain a breach and stop it leading to data loss. So one of the myths out there is that the hackers get in and very quickly hack your systems and steal all your information. And that tends not to happen. You'd be surprised how slow it can happen. In the last year, we've had breaches where the systems were inadvertently open to the internet and hackers have got in. And in one case, it took 3 months before the breach escalated into something serious. Sounds a long time. Another one, it took 9 months. Another one, 12 months. And the most extreme one we've had in the last year, it had been 3 years since the systems were inadvertently open to the internet before the breach escalated. So you actually have a lot of opportunity in breaches to spot something and respond and contain it before it becomes serious. And you'll see an example of that in one of the major fines that's been announced this year. So that's where the artificial intelligence that we developed, and it's our own technologies. We've got a 19-year record of year-on-year organic growth. We average 20% a year, and we develop our own technologies. So it's all our own IP. This side is more the consultancy side. So here we've got recurring revenues, 3-year contracts. Over here, it tends to be shorter-term consultancy, but this is where we win the clients. So we win clients doing consultancy, and then over time can turn them into a managed service client. The top one is testing security. So in the industry, we call it penetration testing. So in simple terms, people hire us to hack their systems. We don't hack them and then approach the client because that would be illegal. There's a Computer Misuse Act. It's very clear. You can't do anything that you're not authorized to do. So people ask us. Everybody's on our terms and conditions. They ask us to hack into their systems. We give them a report. A cybersecurity review is a little bit different. Rather than hacking into the systems, we go on site and sit down with the people managing their protection and look at the expertise of the people, what systems they've got and how they've configured them. So we come at it from a different perspective. We then have a range of certifications that, depending on the organisation, these certifications can be good to either make more sales or to satisfy the information commissioner that you've done the right thing. If you do have a breach and you're potentially going to get fined, you can say, look, we tried to do the right thing. Here's our certifications. And they fall into a few different groups. The Cyber Essentials is a UK certification for SMEs. So a small organization without much IT expertise, it's a good way of getting a good basic level of cybersecurity. Larger organizations, there's an international standard ISO 27001. So a little bit like 9001 for quality, 27001 is the equivalent for cybersecurity. And then if somebody's handling payment cards, there's an industry standard worldwide called the Payment Card Industry Data Security Standard, or PCI-DSS. And depending on the standard, we either act as a consultant and somebody else does a certification, or if the certification works where it's the same person, then we'll do both of those roles. But if we have to choose one or the other, are we the consultant or are we the assessor, we'll always choose to be the consultant because that's the better way of developing a relationship with the client. The market, we're UK-based. We win all our clients in the UK. It's estimated at about 3 billion. So we've got quite a big market to go at. Breaches are happening all the time. It's becoming more of a board issue. And the big change is the GDPR legislation. So the GDPR legislation that you will have got really sick of a year ago because you were getting all these largely unnecessary emails asking you to reconfirm your details and everyone got a bit bored with it. That was about people doing legal things with data. Had they collected data in a legal way? Had they got the right permissions, etc.? And there's fines that can be allocated for people doing naughty things with data. But the other side of GDPR is fining people for having a breach. So when I started doing this more than 20 years ago, the fines for a data protection breach were actually a personal fine for a director. So you'd think that would have been quite an incentive for people to sort out security. But that personal fine for directors was a maximum of £50. So not a lot of incentive. And then a new Data Protection Act came out and it went up to 500,000. And now GDPR makes it 2% of global turnover. So a big change, and you'll see some of the fines that have resulted from that. So we've got a big, significant opportunity to scale the business, and we've got pipeline of opportunities at record levels. This illustrates the size of the problem. These are the number since we started, back in 1999, 2000. These are the number of new technical vulnerabilities in IT systems that are discovered and published worldwide. So there's a database that says, here's a new way of hacking a system. So let's say tomorrow somebody discovers a new way of hacking your smartphone, then that'll be one of the things that gets registered on here. So when we started, it was a few hundred a year, and we used to meet every week to formally discuss all the new vulnerabilities that had come out that week. In the last couple of years, it's been more than 15,000 a year. And we now formally meet every 8 hours, 7 days a week, to discuss what's new, what are the new threats and vulnerabilities coming out that could affect our clients. So it shows you the how this has accelerated. So the technical problem of systems becoming insecure and being open to hackers is getting worse and worse. So the IT industry isn't sorting out cybersecurity. The problem is getting worse, and that's why you see so many breaches. So the fines, these have been announced, they're actually announced in the first week of July. And up to that point, the 2% of turnover was theoretical, and we haven't seen it in actual practice. So there have been fines since the GDPR legislation, but those fines related to breaches before the legislation, so the 500,000 limit still applied. But British Airways got hacked after this became law. They were actually incorporating on their website where they sold tickets some advertising, and that was run by some code that was being brought in from a third party. So in other words, they'd made a decision to go for more sales and do sales and marketing over and above security. Because a security person would have said, oh no, it's a bit risky incorporating somebody else's code on our website where we're selling tickets and taking payments. Let's keep it as simple as possible. So they put sales ahead of security. And the people who were providing that code got hacked. Their site got hacked as a result, and they lost 500,000 customer details. And the Information Commissioner announced in July that they intend to fine them £183 million, which equates to 1.5% of group turnover. So the percentage applies to the ultimate owner of the organisation. So you can't carve off a small business to do your dangerous things and limit the fines. Marriott Hotel, you could say we're unlucky, but they got fined for 7 million customer records, which relate to the UK. They actually lost 339 million guest records. And this was a chain of hotels they bought called Starwood Hotels. They bought them in 2016. And in 2018, they discovered that they had been hacked for the last 4 years. So the hack actually started 2 years before they bought them. And the Information Commissioner said they're going to fine them £99 million, which is 0.6% of group turnover. And the thing that the Information Commissioner said in this case is lack of due diligence. So if you buy somebody without proper due diligence, the cyber attack was already ongoing, and then it took them another 2 years to discover it, which goes back to what I said, that attacks can take a long time to play out. So the attack went on for 4 years, and they get a fine as a result. It's going to be interesting to see where else in Europe, given that GDPR is across Europe, which other countries also add fines onto that. So they've been fined there for only 7 million of the 339 million things that they lost. So you can see a big change from £50 per director. We're now into some serious numbers, so a material risk for organisations. The next thing we'll look out for is how smaller organisations get treated. So we've seen what can happen to larger ones. And the other thing to look out for is a significant change with GDPR. Is if you've taken your personal data and outsourced its processing to a third-party IT provider, then under the previous to GDPR, you held the risk. So if that provider got hacked, then you got the fine. And then you look at your terms and conditions and find there's a limit of liability and you can't recover it. GDPR gives them also a liability. So in theory, if a third party causes the breach, they could get all the fines. So it'd be interesting to see how this plays out in the next few years. And when there's breaches caused by a third party, how are the fines allocated? Is it you that gets fined if it's your data because you haven't managed that third party properly? and got the right security in place and done the right due diligence against that supplier, or do they get all the fine because it's them that ultimately caused the breach? So expect this to play out over the next few years. This is the start. This just answers the question, are they going to be serious on the fines and issue the fines of up to 2%? So the answer is yes. But then we've got further things that will play out over the next few years. So we updated our interims in June. The managed services division, which has got those managed services and the incident response, had grown 63%. But we saw a decline in consulting revenue. So in the first half of the year, we saw, and other people have seen a similar thing in our sector, people delaying things, uncertainty, and that for us impacted on consultancy. I've got a slide on post-period, and that's now been reversed, but I'll come on to that. So our revenue for the first 6 months was pretty flat, but we'd made some improvements in terms of our overall financial performance. So our gross profit did increase by 18%. And our EBITDA losses, because we're coming to the end of the investment period following flotation, that dropped from $500,000 the year before to $0.19 million. We got 59 new clients. That's a rate increase on 18% on the year before. And the partner program, which is new, we've got a new channel to market, which is recruiting partners, which we started recruiting those in January. And they generated 70% of the new client wins and started contributing to revenue as well. But we're in the first year of a two-year program to develop that new sales channel. Post-period, that dip in consulting reversed and went the other way. So from July onwards, we've seen strong growth in consultancy along with the existing growth in managed services and incident response. So in July, we were 42% up on the same month the year before, and that took us into profit, so £100,000 profit for that, that month. And when we released these in September, we said record levels of consulting bookings in Q3 and Q4. So Q3 was a record. And we have seen that continue into Q4. So a reversal of what happened in the first half of the year. We had £400,000 of cash on the 6th of September when we reported this, but we also had an unused bank facility of £500,000. Cash has continued to grow. And for us, profit turns into cash very quickly. It's a very simple business in terms of financially. If consulting grows ahead of managed services, you've got a little bit of working capital requirement because the consultants like to be paid every month. If it's managed services, there's some upfront costs when somebody signs a managed service contract, so that tends to be cash positive. But broadly speaking, profit turns into cash. Trading in line with expectations, Allenby are our broker and they make their research note public. So on our website, you've got a link into their research note. So it is available to smaller investors. And for the full year, we're on track to be EBITDA profitable. And that's what we reported in September. What that will give us for the year, these are the two forecasts from Allenby. So the forecast there for this year and next year, and then profitability growing into next year. This is when we IPO'd. About a third of the, we put a third of the shares in the market when we IPO'd. The management team, nobody sold any shares at IPO. That's all organic growth. We've never done any acquisitions, and there was no significant investment since the start. It was originally funded by some family and friends and me putting £50,000 on credit cards twice and mortgaging to pay that off. Those were in the nice days when mortgages were easy to refinance. We've established key performance indicators in the last couple of reporting periods. So in addition to growth, looking at the split between consultancy and managed services, you'll see the managed service gross margin, big increase there because we built capacity. So the proceeds of the IPO allowed us to establish a new security operations centre in the UK and open the one in Brisbane to give the proper 24/7 coverage. Today's market for security professionals is very buoyant. You can't get good people that will work night shifts. It just doesn't work. So if you're going to do it properly, you do need two centres globally dispersed. We build that capacity. We can now leverage that. That's why you see the margin increasing there. We've also added in our research and development investment because some investors said that that was an interesting number for them to see, because we are developing and continue to develop our technologies. So we've added that in as a KPI as well. So the outlook, post-GDPR fines, so as those feed in and people start to see those in their sector and related to companies of their size, we're open to acquisitions, but we need to be very clear that we can see value. If it's a consultancy, we can employ those consultants anywhere. And if there was a technology we needed, we would just develop that technology. So our main strategy is organic growth, but we look at acquisitions if we think they'll add value. Increasing that focus on managed services. So our intention is to grow the managed service recurring revenue, and we've been successful in that the last couple of years. Keep leveraging that capacity that we built in the IPO, and then growing the profitability. And the sales partner channel of opening up resellers. That's a two-year program. The aim is to have 200 partners by the end of next year, and we're recruiting them at the rate of about 10 a month. So we're on track in terms of the development of that. So in summary, organic growth, cybersecurity, it's an issue for every board. All the boards of everybody that you have invested in will be talking about cybersecurity. We still see strong demand despite the uncertainty in the UK, and the regulation and the fines is driving those sales, and continued development of artificial intelligence. It's not a magic bullet. It doesn't replace people for the foreseeable future, but it allows us to do things that weren't possible before we used those sorts of technologies. Okay, thank you very much. I'll take questions.
You have to excuse me. I haven't read the IPO document, but can you just give us a bit of a colour as to the rationale behind the listings? I think you listed, was it a couple of years ago? Or
yeah, end of 2016. We'd had a lot of offers to buyers, and we wanted to grow quicker. We saw the opportunity with GDPR. So it was either, do we become part of something bigger, or do we get some investment and scale up ourselves? We could see that GDPR on the horizon and strengthening market, and we didn't want to exit and dilute overly, so we thought flotation was a good way to raise that money. And also it positions us that it's a very fragmented market with a lot of small players, and being a PLC with 20 years of history and a really great client base, including 10% of the FTSE 100, it positions you over and above the new entrants and the people who have just got into this. I haven't gone into clients for obvious reasons, given what we do and our technical certifications and all of that. But the history and the PLC status, it all helps establish credibility.
That's great. And you're not really looking to tap the capital markets by the sound of it, you know, for equity or
We would if we thought it was necessary. But I'm still the biggest shareholder and I don't really like dilution. And I think our investors appreciate that. You know, we've had some challenges since we floated, but somebody buying X percent of the company at flotation still owns that same percentage, and they like that. Whereas we've seen competitors dilute to a large extent.
I think your initial slides indicated you are completely UK focused at the moment.
Yes.
Is that something you'll look to change as you get bigger? I'm thinking with your obviously Australian operation.
Yeah, the Australian operation is only for delivery, so we don't have any sales capacity there. The thing that we always bear in mind, though, is the size of the UK market. We've got 3.3 billion to go at. So we don't see a strong driver to extend abroad. And we've worked in more than 30 countries, but that tends to be where we gain a multinational client in the UK, and then they want us to work elsewhere. But doing a geographic expansion and recruiting a new sales team in another country could be a big distraction. So at the moment, we don't think growth is constrained.
So your previous graph showed quite kind of smooth organic revenue growth over the years. This one here. But when I look at the Stockopedia stock report, it jumps around quite a lot. Is there acquisition-related revenue that
Nope, no acquisitions. Okay. The one thing that throws people sometimes is this little star here, that prior to IPO, we did a 15-month year. So if you just look at the headline rates, it looks like it went up and dropped after IPO.
That'll explain it.
That's an adjusted what it would look like if it was 12 months. So that's probably what you've seen.
Ian,
always bring a little book.
Yes.
And I always think when I answer a question, there's going to be another 10.
There's only two.
Okay.
This
gentleman attends our AGMs and always asks really interesting questions. Go on.
Hopefully these will be. In your other bar chart, the number of cybersecurity incidents was increasing, but there was a huge jump in 2017.
Right, so these aren't incidents, these are new technical vulnerabilities.
Okay. Is there any specific reason why 2017 was such a vintage year, like an introduction of Windows 10?
There's two interesting things on this graph. One is what happened here? Why did the world get more secure? And the other is what happened here to make it more insecure? Really, it's just got worse and worse every year in pretty much a straight line. So there's two things here. Is around about this time, the software vendors were getting a lot of grief for the number of vulnerabilities they were discovering and the number of patches that they were saying. So when you get told to do a security update, the security updates were coming more and more regular, and the vendors, particularly some of the big multinational IT vendors, were getting a lot of grief. So what they did, rather than do a fix for every single vulnerability, they said, let's just do one a month. So we'll roll them all up and do one fix every month. And surprise, surprise, the number of vulnerabilities goes down because we're saying here's one fix, but it's actually fixing 10 things. And the other vendors all copied. So you got an artificially lowering of the number of vulnerabilities because the vendors were hiding them. What actually happened here is the global system called CVE actually made it easier to report vulnerabilities. So this is a truer picture of what was happening all along. So it isn't that the world got so much more insecure 2 years ago. It's just got steadily worse every year. So the graph's not quite representative. But the key thing is just the number, the 15,000 a year. So it just means every day of the week, there's about 20 new ways of hacking systems being discovered.
Right, second question. I generally think of people who hack as having brains the size of planets, and they're clever people. So why does it take them 1 or 2 years to actually do the proper hacking after they've gained access?
I don't know. We're really disappointed. They could do so much more. We're surprised how little hacking there is. Because it's so... When we test people's security, we invariably can breach it. So why aren't the hackers doing more? And I think there's a couple of answers. One is most people have no way of detecting a breach. So when people say, I've never had a breach, I say, oh, tell me about your intrusion detection systems. And they say, what's one of those? So if you've no way of detecting a breach, you can't say you've not had a breach. And the other thing is that the person who hacks you isn't the person who ultimately will cause the significant breach. So what tends to happen is somebody finds a way in, they'll then sell that information on, and then somebody else will, and people will then, it escalates over time. But I think there's more things to hack than there are active hackers. So I just think it's a playground for lots of people, and therefore, but one thing that's really important is every single breach we've ever dealt with in 20 years was preventable. So don't succumb to this myth that the hackers are so clever that they'll always get in. That's what people who've had a breach try and make you believe, that it wasn't their fault, the hackers would always get in. And that's just complete nonsense. So every single breach we've had, not only the ones we've dealt with, but the ones we've heard of, we've never heard of a breach that wasn't preventable. So don't believe the press releases you get from the people who've been hacked. They'll tend to make out that the hacker was super clever. And it's not. It's normally that they've been super stupid, but they won't tell you that.
Does that mean you can detect zero-day exploits?
Okay, so zero-day is a bit of industry terminology. Zero-day just means it's one of these new vulnerabilities. And you'll get vendors who will say, we have some fancy technology, usually artificial intelligence, that can detect zero-day. That's just nonsense. So what you're saying is, I've got a way of detecting something that I don't know about. well, that's got to be nonsense. You don't need to be a specialist to know that. You cannot guarantee that you can detect something that's never been seen before. What you can say is if you've got a history of blocking things and detecting things, and that's worked very well, and you've got a good track record of doing that, the chances are that you will be able to spot these new things. But security professionals have a habit of focusing on the really unusual and the really esoteric and the completely unlikely to ever happen to you. And people don't get hacked with the zero day, the brand new, very clever thing. They get hacked because they've done something daft. So the professionals can tend to focus on the really interesting and unusual. And actually, cybersecurity is actually, apart from incident response, which is exciting, to do it properly is actually quite boring, because it's about doing IT really well and consistently, and doing things to a high standard and documenting things and managing things well and just doing IT really well. And most people don't do it. So people just do things too quickly and they have to force projects through and they don't understand it. And all the pressure is about getting the new product out. And then they cut corners and then they have breaches.
Ian, thank you very much. Fantastic. Okay.
Thank you very much.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.